Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Our next guest writes, why in a country that consumes 25% of the world's resources, he's speaking of the United States, is there an epidemic of loneliness, depression and anxiety? Why do so many in the West who have all of their basic needs met still feel impoverished? While some politicians might answer, it's the economy, stupid, based on scientific evidence, the better answer is, it's the lack of compassion around us. These are the thoughts of world-renowned neurosurgeon, philanthropist, entrepreneur and founder of the Center for Compassion and Altruism Research and Education, CCARE for short, Dr. James Doty. Dr. Doty currently serves as the clinical professor of neurosurgery at Stanford University, which is a long way from his impoverished start in life.
My father was an alcoholic. My mother was an invalid who had a seizure disorder, chronic depression, and paralysis. And we were on public assistance my entire life. And I have memories of going to the emergency room with my mother and not having health insurance and hearing doctors or comment about how they have to waste their time with another person who doesn't have the money to pay for care, which, of course, is humiliating. You know, another instance, I was actually an Explorer Scout, and at least in the United States, we have programs where you can have specialization, and I was involved in two organizations. One was the Medical Explorers, and one was the Law Enforcement Explorers. During the time as a law enforcement explorer, I was actually working with the jailer, and my father was arrested. And again, until they realized it was my father, you know, they were quite cruel. You see situations like that when your loved ones are treated without respect or without dignity, and of course, it's very painful. And you feel shamed.
At about the age of 13, your life path takes a dramatic twist, doesn't it, with the help of a lady in a magic and novelty shop?
That is a very formative time of your life, and you start making decisions that could potentially have a major impact on one's life. And I was, because of feelings of hopelessness and despair, I was becoming involved in what I will simply say as negative behaviors. And one day, I had ridden my bike somewhat distance further than I normally do, and I was at a strip mall, and there was a magic shop, and I walked into this magic shop because I had an interest in magic, and the owner of the shop was not there, but his mother was there while he was out doing errands, and apparently she was visiting for the summer. And interestingly enough, she knew nothing about the contents of the magic shop or magic itself, but she did have an extraordinary attitude, and it was an attitude of love and openness. For a 13-year-old in my situation, that was not always readily available in interactions with adults. Her and I began a conversation, and after about 20 or 30 minutes, she said to me, "I really like you. I'm here for another 6 weeks. If you come in here every day, I'll teach you something that I think could change your life." For 6 weeks, her and I spent about an hour and a half to 2 hours every day. And during that period of time, she taught me a type of mindfulness practice in addition to a visualization technique, sort of intertwined with the power of positive thinking. And that had a profound effect on how I thought of myself in the world. Prior to that, I used to tell people, or I thought of myself as a leaf being blown by an ill wind. And an individual who had, frankly, little to no possibilities for a future. Following that interaction, suddenly my perspective completely changed, and I realized that I had unlimited potential.
When you decided that you were going to study medicine, what were the responses of those around you when you committed yourself to those tasks?
Well, that's an interesting question. One of the things this woman taught me, when you openly discuss an audacious vision or that you're going to do something extraordinary or that you wish to or you're going to try to do, instead of being encouraging, sometimes those around you or in your social group actually will tell you, oh, don't try, it's not worth it, you'll never be able to do it. There are two aspects of that. One is what they're really telling you is they can't do it, and therefore they don't want you to do it. Because if you do it, it says something about them. And one of the gifts this woman gave me was a absolute belief in a moral compass. That has been one of the greatest gifts because, frankly, if I listened to all the people who said I would not amount to much, that I would not go to college, that I would not go to medical school, I would be pumping gas probably somewhere. And not that pumping gas is not an honorable profession, but that being said, certainly if one has the ability to do other things and help people and go beyond that, certainly that's a good thing, I think, as well.
Doctor, you're blessed with a gifted mind. The world is your oyster. Why did you select medicine?
Again, it goes back to an interaction. When I was in fourth grade, a doctor came to the classroom to speak. He was a family doctor, and I was so moved because not only was he extraordinarily kind, but I asked him some questions. And after his talk, he came over and specifically spoke with me. And he was really the first, if you will, professional person who actually, again, had sort of shown kindness and demonstrated a belief that potentially I could be like that. And he so impressed me that, frankly, that day I made a decision to become a doctor, and it never varied from there.
Doctor, we mentioned early on that you're the founder of CCARE, an acronym standing for the Center for Compassion and Altruism Research and Education, dedicated to the study of compassion, where it comes from, and how we can culture it in our daily lives. Clearly, you came across some very compassionate people early on in your life, which formed you into the man that you are today in part. What were some of the other reasons you were so passionate about starting this project?
Well, I think part of it was a paradox, and that paradox is, why is it that individuals who have extraordinary capacity in the context of position, resources, or influence don't reach out and help those who are less fortunate or who are suffering? In fact, some individuals in those positions either ignore it, those individuals completely, or almost, or sometimes are even derisive of them. They feel they have no value, or that somehow those types of individuals or individuals who are suffering, it was their own personal failings that resulted in them being poor or in a particular position, instead of sitting there saying, geez, I am so fortunate to be in this position and so fortunate to be able to help others, and that it is my obligation as a human being to be of service to humanity. And then you look at the paradox, which is individuals who have very little, who have significantly suffered themselves or are suffering, and who, without even thinking, immediately reach out and attempt to assist others or to give to others who are suffering. And it was that paradox and understanding that paradox and understanding what are the motivators of human beings to be caring or not that really stuck with me into adulthood to the degree that I would decide to create this center and focus my research endeavors at that point in this area.
So what's the verdict then, Doctor? Are we born with compassion, genetically coded to be compassionate, or is it a neuroelectrical response or a chemical response to our environment?
Well, I think it's all of those things. First appearance or emergence, actually, of compassion and empathy and love is actually the bond between a caregiver and an infant, or a mother and an infant. Intrinsically within us is a hard wiring, which is genetic in great part, and electrical and chemical. We know, as an example, that one of the chemicals which is responsible for this type of bonding or deep love is oxytocin. Some people call it the love hormone or the bonding hormone. And we know that when a mother is caring for a child, that hormone is released. And we see that in interactions. And when, in fact, that hormone is released, it actually makes the person feel calm and want to connect with another. So we know that there's a genetic component, and this also in part explains why there are some people who have no or limited capacity, if you will, to care for others. As an example, sociopaths who do not respond to the emotional states of others. I have joked that it also includes Wall Street bankers, but I won't.
And I bet you get a laugh every time.
Right. But in fact, we do know that sociopaths actually have a larger representation in that group of that profession because they're rewarded for being that way. But we look at the other extreme, which is individuals such as the Dalai Lama or Desmond Tutu, and these individuals just innately are kind and compassionate, and then there's most of us in between. If one simply shows compassion as a behavior, it actually stimulates those around them to be more compassionate. We also know that when someone receives compassion, it makes them more compassionate. We know that when an individual is being compassionate, this results in an increase in their vagal tone, which results in them lowering their blood pressure, having a sense of calmness and contentment, improves their executive control from their frontal lobe area, and also results in increased metabolism in their pleasure center. So we know that by an individual acting compassionate, being compassionate with intent, decreases the risk of certain diseases, decreases the severity of certain diseases, and in fact increases longevity. As an example, if you translate compassion into service or caring for others, there was a study that was done on women over the age of 65 who did a certain number of service hours weekly. These women demonstrated actually up to twofold increase in longevity compared to the controls. Goodness. Which is quite extraordinary. Yeah. There were a couple exceptions in this self-report study, and the exceptions were in individuals who were doing the act of service, not, if you will, authentically, but to gain something, either recognition or some sort of a reward. And what this tells you is that you have to care authentically, not just because you want to impress people.
So given that compassion doesn't seem to have a downside anywhere, why doesn't it underpin our economies or appear as a subject in schools?
Well, I think there are many reasons for that. Sadly, one is ego. And unfortunately, we know that greed, conspicuous consumption, the acquisition of things has a short-term benefit in making someone feel good. The reality, though, is it's very short-term. And there is, in fact, an entire field called neuromarketing, which manipulates people to, frankly, act not in their best interest. The other difficulty that we have, especially in Western society, is that many people are hypercritical of themselves and beat themselves up. If you're hypercritical with yourself and if you're not compassionate with yourself, it's also difficult to be compassionate to others. You know, if you're in pain, oftentimes you are self-absorbed with your own pain. And the interesting thing, though, is that if you can be kind to yourself and also reach out and serve others, not only does your own pain decrease, but you also have a sense of well-being just because you're serving others.
Dr. Doty, you've been incredibly generous with your time, if not compassionate. Thank you so much for your insights. Where do we go from here? What can we do to build compassion in our own lives and the lives around us?
Well, you know, one of the things that I found very powerful and which I practice every day and which puts me into a mental state to be of service to others is actually an alpha mnemonic that came to me while I was preparing a speech for medical students, which is C through L. And I tell you, every morning when I get up, I close my eyes, take several slow, deep breaths, exhale, and as I'm doing that, I go through this alpha mnemonic, and it starts with C, which is compassion, being compassionate to yourself and recognizing that everyone is suffering, and to think in your interactions that another person may be suffering and that may be the cause of their behavior, and to be gentle with them. D is recognizing the dignity of every person. E is equanimity, recognizing that there are going to be ups and downs in one's life. It is wonderful when you have a great day, but those are short-lived in the sense that you can't only wish for that. Because if you're always striving for that, it distracts you from being present to lead your life today. Mm-hmm. F is for forgiveness. One of the greatest challenges for individuals and one that gets people emotionally stuck is being angry at an individual who they feel has done wrong to them. The reality is each of us, our lot as a human being, is that we're not perfect and that each of us will probably do a wrong to another person, either intentionally or unintentionally. And unless you can forgive somebody and have an open heart, it emotionally locks you and prevents you from being of service, caring for others. And G is gratitude, recognizing that most of us are very, very fortunate that, remember, a large percentage of the population frankly survives on a dollar or two a day. There's a tendency to look up at people who have more and wish you were like them instead of looking down and saying, oh my gosh, I am so blessed. H is humility, recognizing that to be of service to others, you have to recognize that each of us is a human being. You're not above, you're not below, you're a human being, and you care for another as an equal. I is for integrity, having a set of morals and ethics that guide you in your life that you do not deviate from. J is justice, our responsibility as a human being to assert and protect others who are vulnerable. K is kindness, which is the implementation or the active component of compassion. And all of this is contained within L, which is love.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.